The Sour Hour is meant for the serious brewer. The Sour Hour may contain some seriously funkified content. The Sour Hour is not for the faint of heart. So exercise some damn discretion, would you please? Sheesh. And now, here's The Sour Hour with Jay Goodwin.
Back, it's episode 101, Scott.
Somehow less climactic.
Yeah. Episode 100 was a great show. That was a lot of fun. Thank you guys for coming back. And just cool that we've been on for, what, 15 years now? Is that right?
Seems a little light. I think it's 20.
Okay, 20 yeah. years. 20 years on the show. Veteran. Eat it, Adam Carolla.
Yeah. Suck it, Carolla.
It's that time. It's the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network. I love Carolla. I'm your host, Jay. It's Brewing Network Studios in downtown Concord, here with Bevo, who's sticking it out, actually.
Thanks for sticking around, Beaver.
Yeah. Maybe we should even do more information in this episode to make sure she stays?
Oh, she looked a little pale just now.
That's not unusual.
Shut up. I don't have any information to give you.
You never do.
Exactly.
Okay, cool.
Rude.
By the way, from the last show, we teased it out, but Justin did miss his doctor's appointment. Yeah, he decided he was too drunk to go.
Wasn't a real doctor. And
whoa. It's a doctor.
I know, I'm just kidding.
Anyway.
The levels of irony there that he was too drunk to go in this particular.
I'm sure he won't mind that I said that. It's totally fine. We're here with the guys from Rubens Brews. Hey, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi.
Also, Chris from Oregon Fruit, one of our all-time great sponsors. Hey, Chris.
Howdy, thank you.
Oh, you want glasses now?
No, hey, those are old man glasses.
Sorry. Taking them off. Top of the show stuff. Don't call us because our phone lines have been disconnected.
There are no phones.
But, you know, obviously donate to the Brewing Network because of that fact. join us in the chat.
Yeah.
Bevo's still here. Feedback during the week. Scott@thebrewingnetwork.com. Jay@thebrewingnetwork.com. You can watch us at thebrewingnetwork.com/TV. Listen live on the Brewing Network app. Search BN Mobile in your search bars and such. Subscribe and leave feedback on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get this show. And we don't have another feedback, but we didn't get a rejoiner last time.
That's true.
So maybe does anyone have like a song they're really into right now? We could do it later in the show as a rejoiner. You guys know, I mean, you know what I'm talking about? So it's like,
throw out a song you like.
Yeah, just throw it out.
Morrissey. Maybe not.
Morrissey, what song?
The title of the song is Maybe Not.
Yeah.
Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now.
Oh, let's check this out. Let's play it, Scott.
That's perfect for listening to the Sour Hour. Oh, my God. Jay, you want to do the... I would let it play through...
KCAL 107.7. This is Morrissey. I don't remember the song title.
This is also very on brand for you.
In a restaurant. I was looking for a job
and then I found a job. All right, I'll keep that.
It makes me want to drink.
Put a little more.
And more, I want to drink.
Look at this freaking guy. He's out of Central Casting.
Beautiful shirt.
Oh, look at that move.
We're watching. This is the official music video.
He's got a falsetto, though.
And balloons.
All right, yeah, this should be the rejoiner. This part.
Give me a welcome back to the Sour Hour.
That's us.
Two lovers and
you guys.
And we're back.
We never left.
Two lovers entwined. Back in the Sour Hour. Scott and Bevo.
No.
Bevo wishes.
But yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Good choice.
You can be honest.
Yeah. I like it. I want to hit a quick sponsor off the top. I mean, good friend, wineandhop.com, locally owned and operated for over 40 years. Most items are going to ship within 24 hours, and if they don't, they'll be hell to pay. BN listeners get $8 flat shipping rate on orders under 25 pounds. Enter BN shipping in the notes field of the shopping cart. Discount's going to be taken off after checkout. And Madison residents, which we had a Wisconsin question earlier, so maybe you should be this person to go to Working Draft Beer Company. You order your homebrew supplies online at wineandhop.com. Pick them up at Working Draft Beer Company, located on Wilson Street, right across from Central Park. They're going to waive shipping and give you half off your first beer. So I just assume you're going to order a keg, wineandhop.com. All right, we're back. We have more beer with Ruben Spruce. And this, I think I overheard, was boysenberry and what? Blackberry. Awesome.
It's the same beer, just with different fruit. Is that right? As the guava one.
Yes.
Another Britannia.
Yeah, so Britannia is a series that's going to have the same
so
base
British.
Dish.
So British.
Heaven knows I'm miserable.
Go Spurs. Sorry.
You threw you
off the rails.
You did. Yeah. We've just been talking about Tottenham a lot. So, yeah, so Britannia is a series that's going to show different fruits on essentially the same base beer. We started the beer in two separate puncheons, and now we've scaled it to a 30-barrel footer so we can get more... show more examples of different fruits. This was actually the first one we did. The guava was the second one.
Yeah.
This was the first, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, the first beer we released from our Oak Age Sour program, and it won at the NABA, which is kind of nice recognition for the first beer that we did. I mean, we like it. I think this is a lot more... Yeah, we liked it, and they liked it, so that's good.
I mean, it's fine, you know.
That's what
fair to Midland.
Yeah.
It's so different than the guava beer. It's so different.
I disagree.
Really, I experience it as way less acidic. I would have no idea this was from the same lineup of...
I would.
You would.
So moving on. No, I think there's a high carb, a dryness, but still a lot of the fruit character shines through. I think... If you want to say it's more acidic, I think maybe that has a lot to do with the fruit.
The guava, yeah.
But I think the base seems like... I could definitely tell if we didn't pour this and I knew what the bottle was, you know, where the bottle was from, I would be like, it's from the same brewery.
No kidding.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think they're fairly similar in character, but obviously it's like guava and blackberries are two very different fruit. But there's an underlying character that's part of the whole Britannia series that I think is there, for sure.
Definitely. And don't forget the boysenberries.
Oh, well, of course.
Because I, and Chris, go ahead and steal this if you want, but I say that boysenberries are the taste like chicken of berries. Because they all...
Generic berry flavor?
Not generic, just they remind everyone of...
Something.
Something
oh,
else.
Interesting.
Yeah, totally.
So I think marketing a berry... being chicken-like would be great for your business.
I love chicken, Jay. You know that.
Aseptic chicken. It's a pure expression of the raw chicken.
Free range boysenberries, my friend. Free range. No, the one thing I will say is the color is glorious. You guys did an amazing job of extracting color. But boysenberries are the hidden gem in our portfolio. Actually, nobody thinks about boysenberries because most people don't know what they are.
It's a mistake. I was joking about that, the chicken thing, but I feel that way because we made an all boysenberry beer with the Oregon fruit boysenberry puree. And those were the comments we got back. Oh, strawberry, blackberry, blueberry, raspberry. And it's just it's boysenberry. And people ask me even, it's like, so what does boysenberry taste like? And then I tell them it tastes like chicken.
Yeah.
It's like chicken.
I just say put it in your mouth.
Seriously. We'll cut that out. No, Scott is feverishly cutting that out.
I just say put it in your mouth.
Seriously, I've never seen Scott move that fast.
He's quick.
Like, oh,
he's
go.
Quick.
You haven't seen me goaltend, Bebo.
I just say put it in your mouth.
Yeah, there you go. He's got me saying worse at poker tonight.
All in. Go. I have another one of these what if I do this with my whole barrel program questions? Let's say you're making any fruit adjunct. Adding some boysenberry in there just to add a layer of complexity. It's still going to taste like a peach, whatever, but there's some sort of layer there that you don't know. How does that strike you?
Peach from boysenberry?
Well, yeah. And like, in other words, just adding boysenberries in with whatever other dominant fruit that
you're... Peach boys is taken. But...
oh, my God. That's genius.
I love it.
Genius. But
Jay's
I'm saying,
on the record right there. I love it.
Peach boys. Now, what if you were not even going to brand it as such? Like, you were still just going to call it your nectarine...
Boysenberry mint beer, boys to mint. Go on.
Oh, my God. He's on a roll.
Treasure
you're on fire,
trove.
Jay. Jesus.
Holy moly.
Here. Those are new brands.
This
I swear.
Too.
Somebody's going to take those. I just say put it in your mouth.
I agree.
Do not use that.
But you know what I'm saying? You call it your, you know, it's nectarine sour beer, but it just tastes extra complex because there's 5% boysenberries in there.
It's a good question. I think boysenberry is almost like a return to the mean. So you have what I would consider sour, so fruits that you want to use in sour beer on one, let me just say, acidic side of the spectrum or another. So I think peach, I think, depending on the crop, blueberry, maybe boysenberry, blackberry are on like the little less sour side, more sour side. Oh, wait, let me add one more to the other side. Mango, for sure. Mm-hmm. And then other side, more acidic, passion fruit, raspberry.
Blackcurrant.
Cranberry. For sure. Cranberry. Yeah. It's just inherent in those fruits. So I think kind of knowing those polar opposites is good. You can balance them out with each other. And, you know, you can make some good combinations in there. I mean, again, it's not the live read. The Oregon fruit makes it easy for that. Like, you really can just do, like, the Peach Boys, and that'd be a good beer. I mean, that's a good beer, mm-hmm. for sure, and a good name.
I think the idea of layering flavor is what we all think of all the time, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's with fruits, with this beer, it makes sense, I think. But, you know, even in the, we haven't talked about the grist here, but it's a rustic saison, so it's got some rye, wheat, mm-hmm. it's got oats in as well, I think. So it's got, we're getting layers of flavor in from different drivers, and that's what we do throughout all the beers, right? The one before, I think guava itself gives us that peppery and that tropical piece. It's balancing itself and then working with the Brett as well. But that's why we have a blend of two different Bretts primarily, just to play with layers, you know, and give complexity.
And we talked about this a little bit before, but what constitutes the entirety of your sour beer program, from the kind of Gose style beer to this barrel age?
Yeah, so when we started with the Gose, we didn't have a separate location to sort of keep everything else, all the clean beers safe. So we, what was that, two and a bit years ago, we got a separate warehouse that we could keep our oak age program in. Right now we have about 60 wine barrels in that. We have two 30-barrel footers from Footer Crafters, which are awesome. And then we have a number of, like, transfer, like, 8-barrel tanks. So we have some, like, Brett primary beers going right now. We have some totes that we would fruit in. We have a cool ship that we brewed 2 batches in this season so far. We actually brewed a spontaneous beer last year, and we tried 2 days ago, yesterday. Yeah.
Yesterday.
Seems like 2 days ago.
You did it.
It tasted really good.
There is no try.
Yeah, do or do not. Yeah.
That's the Tottenham way.
It's our motto, but I don't know what the Latin is, right? You know. Yeah. So we, our first spontaneous beer we did actually in the Russian River way, you know, like using a mash tun as essentially the cool ship, but this year we bought a cool ship, and you know, Thork and Talk, we've done a couple of 15 barrel batches there, but we tasted a couple of the barrels from the original batch, and it's tasting really, really nice and complex.
How is the new cool ship working out?
So far it's worked out pretty well for us. We, you know, we've done 2 batches, and it's going to take a while for us to actually see the results of those batches. From what I've seen, it's worked out great. Beer started fermenting. Doesn't smell horrible, and so I really hope in a year, 2 years, it's going to turn out to be great.
Do you have it up on the top floor, or like, what's the location?
Right now it's in like a separate facility just on the other side of like a garage door, basically, that separates the building still within the same building, and we actually will just run a line underneath that little garage door to knock out into a different room with like a much cooler temperature. We could open up a garage door and get the evening breeze coming in.
I can't remember if you've ever mentioned, Jay, if you ever, it's that, if that's in the future plans or anywhere in your thoughts for a Rare Barrel.
Current. We have one spontaneous beer going right now, and we're going to brew our second year.
Where's the cool ship?
No, we brought it back to our brewery. We have these totes, stainless steel totes. I wouldn't call it a cool ship.
Okay.
We're trying to be as traditional as possible, but not obviously trying that hard. like other than our current limitations.
Yeah.
So.
Which is space, you mean?
Because there's nowhere to put it. Well, no, a lot more than that. Just like a lot of, maybe if you're doing spontaneous beer, the closest example that I know of, I'm sure there's an American producer doing it, just like we're doing it, but like Tilken, for example, they'll ferment their spontaneous beer at traditional lambic brewers around the country, then bring it back the next day. And then they age it and blend it and all that good stuff. We're bringing it back and letting it be spontaneous in our space because, a lot of different reasons, but I think one is also legal. It's a little gray area if you can transport beer like in an open tank and then where is it tax determined? That's kind of the real thing. And so it's going to be a spontaneous beer. Let the yeast fall into it at your place, so it's your beer. You declare tax on it. It's a little more straightforward. So, yeah, we have spontaneous beer. Very non-traditional, but as traditional as we can make it. And we'll see how it comes out.
And you, Rubens guys, you were just down with the – you have the space now with all these extra leases, and now there's room for a cool ship.
Yeah, yeah. So last year we used our smaller breweries at Mash Tun to essentially be a – cool ship in inverted commas to inoculate in that and then ferment in oak and then now we got a cool ship this year. We got six different leases. Like, we got lots of little spaces, so it's kind of like it's kind of like a puzzle in itself to know what to do with which space. So we have one space because with the new brewery we just consolidated production in it that was originally in three different locations into essentially one. So that's freed up one of the buildings, and we've been talking about, I think we'll move our sour production into that space, and that gives us a lot more capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Just mental and physical.
Yep, you know? Yep. Totally.
The floor drain's going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Six leases. It's a business owner's dream, am I right, Scott?
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
All right.
Well, why not 10?
A lot more to get to. Let's take a quick break, though, because we're running low on beers. We'll be right back on the Sour Hour.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What's up? This is Blake from Creature Comforts. You're listening to The Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
Go Atlanta United.
Love those fans, Jay.
That one's for you, Blake. The United fans, yeah. He knows what I'm talking about. All right. Shout out to Shaman Creek Brewing. They don't have a football team. But
maybe a pup team.
Two locations and now
kind of
a football
they're
team.
In Pennsylvania, but like Philly? Yeah, Philly beer scene, I guess. Eagles?
What about the Philly football scene?
Go Birds. Award-winning beers in Croydon, Pennsylvania since 2012. Proud winners of four Philly Beer Scene Magazine Awards for Brew of the Year and only three for Brewery of the Year. That's weird to me. Like,
yeah. It's a little
who
light.
Who won? So here's my follow-up question as co-host of the show. Who won Brewer of the Year that they didn't win Brewery of the Year? Let's get an answer to that.
Okay.
I'm on the edge of my seat, yeah. Jay.
Two-time GABF Vienna Style Lager Medal winner, 2013 gold, 2016 bronze. Also bronze for smoke lager in 2016 and predicted by me in 2017.
They're going to win bronze for smoke lager.
I mean, I did predict that. That was one of my greatest
predictions.
That's
exactly how your prediction sounded. I heard it a lot of times in
my
headphones.
Big-ass tap room, 24 beers on tap. If you can't make it to Corton, though, hit up a second location in Jenkintown called the Burrow Brewhouse, which features a full menu of full menu and 22 beers on tap, including guest taps from local breweries, meaderies, as well as Pennsylvania Cider. That's pretty cool. Check them out on ShamieGreekBrewing.com.
I think I have an answer for you. It appears to be Victory Brewing Company.
Wow.
There you go.
No comment.
Moving along.
One of them sponsors the show. Ride or die with the Chamonix. Sorry, Victory.
Sorry, not
Premium
sorry.
Pills is good, but...
It's all right.
Moving on.
Moving on.
Back with the boys from Rubens Brews.
Chris, another beer.
Oregon Fruit. We do have another beer open. I don't... Oh, there are the bottles right in front of me. Pillars of Gold. It's a little different label. What's up with this? Great setup.
Yeah.
They all look at each other. Are you going to answer?
This is Thor's baby. This
So this beer is a beer that I came up with. Mm. It's something that I cherish and love. You know, it's a Belgian pale at heart, but it's been, you know, conditioned with Brett Brooks. And so something that, you know, there might be a beer out there that is very similar to that.
Hmm.
That I really love, and it's it's a beer that I've always wanted to brew myself. Here it is.
Or what are you talking about?
It's hard to tell what is.
This is wonderful. I love this. In fact, I'm gonna pour myself a little bit more. We actually brought up Brett Belgian Trappist beer in the last Hoppin' Brew School episode that we did, talking about how hops really do influence Brett character in sour beers. And just look at kind of the classic. Hey, by the way, don't ever come in and out again. No, I'm just joking. Andrew was asking earlier. He's like, is it cool if I come in and out? And on that last show we did, it was not cool. Shout out to Justin for her. I don't know, just being high stress during it.
That's on year 5.5, he decides the door is a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, this is a whole side note. Yeah, but also, maybe you shouldn't miss the doctor's appointment. Anyway.
Was that what the doctor's appointment was about?
Yeah, apparently.
Stress control.
Anyway, off the rails.
Ooh, so.
But hey, he asked me to come in for the show, so yes. I get to make fun of him.
Indeed.
So we were talking about that hoppy Belgian pale from a Trappist brewery, and I really think that intense hop bitterness, we're adding a lot of hops even late in a sour beer, drives so much more or even all of Brett aromatics. And then Vinny talked about biotransformation and how it's overrated in Saccharomyces and really Brettanomyces. It's the yeast that does that the most. So what's been your guys' experience with hops in your sour beer program?
We didn't, just for the record, we didn't line this up because that's like perfect, because this is the second batch that we've done. Mm-hmm. And the first batch, we didn't dry hop at all. We felt that the Brett character needed a little bit more complexity from that. And so we dry hopped this pretty light, relatively lightly.
Yeah.
Compared to what we normally do for non-sour beers. And that has given a lot more complexity, I think, to the Brett character. So it's totally... I mean, you read our minds almost, honestly.
I mean, I'm good at my job.
Yeah.
I say?
I'd episodes. Say great. You're great at your job, Jay.
Great or the greatest?
Let's stick with great for now,
this
Jay.
This great's good.
Those are the only two options.
You're a great expression of the raw host,
Stephen,
man. Okay?
Stephen Colbert. Sorry, quick thing. Not political at all. Just when George W. Bush was president and very unpopular, he would interview just anyone and be like, so... George W. Bush, great president or our greatest president?
Those are your two options.
And then just obviously to someone who is like not going to say either of them, just like, can I say neither? I only have room here.
There's two options.
There's just two on my sheet here. There's just two places to put. I see either great or greatest. Could you just pick one? And then people just be like,
All right, great. I don't have a vote, so I'm good. I'm legal, but I don't have a vote, just for the record.
Perfect.
Oh, good. Good
sounds,
call.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Before they drag me out.
Right? So our current president is definitely listening.
Yeah.
I'll be cutting all this out in post, just so you know. Yeah.
Anyway. Sorry, I'm off the rails now. So, Britannomyces.
Bevo is frantically pointing at a wrist like, time.
Yeah, no, we're doing all right.
Hey, so, Thor, how long did this take to bottle condition this?
Thank you, Adam. Thank you.
So breaks it now.
Yeah. Don't deport me, please.
This has been in bottle for about 3 months now. So relatively young for a Brett-conditioned pale ale.
It's no joke. Pale super pale. Good, though. I love this. It's a criminally small bottle for how much I want to drink of it.
To my palate, the hops are there up front, but then they go away immediately, and it's a lot of Brett character. And I remember you discussing Orval on, I think, mm-hmm. the last show with Andrew from Modern Times, mm-hmm. and being surprised of how hop forward it was in
Belgium.
Right. And like the warmer, you know, Brett has taken over version that we get in the States generally, the hops are gone basically entirely, right?
Yes.
Okay, so now I'm assuming that will happen to this beer over time. Is that right?
Yeah. We just haven't had that.
I think we're kind of going, or like, we're viewing this in the middle of that transformation.
Yeah. That's what it tastes like.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think so.
So fresh, the hops on tasting up front are more dominant, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. If I wanted to lock in a certain point of that, I want to brew this style. Like, is there a way to lock it in, or it's just going to make the transformation it's going
to
make?
To me, I think it's the long term. The long term is the lock in. So. Mm-hmm. You can taste it along the way, and we're probably having it on the earlier side of the curve now, which I definitely get, like, a lot of citrus and almost stone fruit kind of fruitiness to this. And I would imagine in 6 months from now, that might be mm-hmm. gone. But not to say, like, there aren't other transformative flavors that replace it. So it's not going to be less flavorful. It's just different and still wonderful, which I know that seems like, oh, you know, kind of a classic sour beer trope is it's always going to get better. But I actually like the thing that to me gets better over time the most, ironically enough, are very heavily hopped mixed culture beers or Brett beers, which is just weird to think about now. I think they, as we talked about on the Hop and Brew School show, we said, you know, does it help hops have staying power? And I said no, because staying power is different from longevity. Like, you have flavor longevity, and it just changes a lot over time. But it's not necessarily less. It's just transformative, which makes me super excited about this kind of beer. And this is a great example of that.
I think that's kind of the fun of this style in particular. And I think when you think of kind of its roots, you know, talking about Orval in particular, if you go to Belgium and...
Wait, you said Orval.
I didn't say that. You said that.
We'll cut that out.
But, you know, talking about that kind of beer where if you go to Belgium, you know, often you'll find it on a menu as something that you can buy the 6 month version of, as well as kind of, you know, theoretically, I guess, the fresher version of. But it's offered as two products, and that's really interesting because it's like they are very distinct, and that's kind of the fun in terms of for us, where it's maybe you either know what you're getting or you don't. And I, you know, for me, if when you buy certain Belgian beers, you don't always know how it's been handled, you don't know how it's been stored, and it can change so dramatically because of that. But I think for us, we can kind of control that, where we're not going to release it till we're happy with it. Mm-hmm. And so then that's something that you can enjoy from that point. Or, yeah, maybe 6 months in, from that point on, it's kind of locked in with maybe that more Brett-driven character. And that's awesome. People can kind of ideally, if they're really seeing what we offer and they know the timing of it, they can glom onto what aspect they like the most. If they like it when it's hoppy, they can buy it fresh and they won't store it and they'll drink it, and great. I think that's kind of the fun of all of this, right? It's like, find what you like for each beer, you know? And this one, I think, it kind of has two distinct phases in that regard.
How much of the sour and wild beer you guys do is, I guess, kind of stuff that is non-fruited? Like, we had the Goza, we have this beer, but then we had a couple of fruit beers in between. What are you seeing in your mix that you guys like to do, but also what the customer likes you to do.
I would like to make a comment about this beer, because what really struck me about the uniqueness of this beer is the aroma. And I think Jay hit it right on the button when you said transformation, because if I think of this type of beer, this is a great opportunity to educate American craft drinkers about what it really means to have an amazingly complex beer that will change literally month by month. And so as you taste the beer, you're getting all the lusciousness of that we love as hops. But in the aroma, it literally, I looked at Thor and I said, this has got some serious funk to it.
Mm-hmm.
But then you taste it and it softens up in your mouth. And the profile towards the end is just, it's the best beer I've
had
tonight.
Are you pointing that out too, Scott?
I just say put it in your mouth. Scott, please.
Just want to shout out the American Homebrewers Association. There's no transition that can work there.
I just say put it in your mouth.
The American Homebrewers Association, a community of more than 45,000 individuals who share a common passion.
I just say put it in your mouth.
Since 1978, the AHA has promoted and advanced the most delicious hoppy in the world.
Put it in your mouth.
Providing brewing resources, supporting homebrewer-friendly legislation, offering exclusive
mouth
member deals at breweries and homebrew shops, and hosting...
I just say
one-of-a-kind events like HomebrewCon and the National Homebrewers Conference. Join your local beer-loving peers at
put it in your mouth
homebrewersassociation.org.
Don't worry, Beav. I'm going to cut out all that stuff.
come on. That was great.
Yeah, buddy.
That was great. Good. That was so good. That's the best thing we've ever done.
They'll never know. They'll never be the wiser.
They'll never know.
AHA will not know.
Wait, do I have to?
I'll clean it up for you. Don't worry.
American Homebrewers Association, AHA.org.
Org seems like inappropriate.
Homebrewersassociation.org.
Isn't it .com?
Okay. Is it pronounced org?
Org.org?
Yeah.
I think it's worth rephrasing your, not rephrasing, but just reiterating the question, because I only wanted Chris to not pay, because it was going to be a fruitless question.
Wow.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, double meaning.
You can't rival Jay with those. I'm sorry.
lacking fruit. Do you know what I'm saying? Because you asked him, and we didn't really get an answer.
I think it was, what was the breakdown
of
fruit to non-fruit? Because just to preface, everyone wants fruit beer. And I just think sometimes it's the, you know, less sought-after styles that are sometimes the brewer's beers that are just expressions of, you know, yeast, malt, water, hops, instead of expression of the raw fruit. Easy to use, convenient to store.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the breakdown for your guys' beers?
I think what you're saying is like fruit can sometimes overwhelm, you know, if it's not in balance with the rest of the beer.
Right.
So we have a kettle sour series one of the four beers in that series is non-fruited, and that's the Gozer that we had earlier. In our sort of wild program, we have Pillars of Gold, which in terms of volume has been, you know, it's a relatively quicker turn beer. So we tend to have that on tap more often than not. This batch actually is the first time that we've poured this second batch of it, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not even on in our tap room right now, and you've got it in the Hop Grenade as well. So
the what?
The Greater Brewing Network Studios kegerator. Jay's, there's distribution laws and nonsense, and Jay's convinced he still can't. Yes, in California.
I am convinced.
He thinks that he can't say where his beer is on unless you bribe a state official or something.
Even if you're a foreigner?
No, I have to bribe college admissions officials.
College admissions, got it. No, if you're a foreigner, I think all is fine.
Shout out Felicity Huffman.
They don't understand my accent, right? I've been asked if am I Russian.
Nobody asked.
What is my native language? Is the
are
best
you,
one.
Are you a bot? Are you a bot?
You're obviously a bot.
Yeah, bot.
Are you Russian?
What is my native language? I had to ask my wife to respond to that one, because it's like, wow, that's kind of harsh. I've lost my train of thought now.
Yeah. Typical foreigner losing his train of thought.
So we have Pillars Gold, and then we have what we call Tropical Funk, which is 100% Brett primary IPA. Like in terms of the volume of beer that we've released, those are the predominant amount. We've released Guava and Boysenberry Britannia. And we also have a couple of fresh fruit beers, tart cherries and peaches that are still aging out and getting ready to release.
So 50-50?
No, it's probably... Right now, in terms of the total volume, is probably like 75-25, right, of non-fruited.
75 non-fruit.
Yeah, mostly non-fruit.
And most of our stock. So right now, we're building up...
Keep it up. Sorry. That's like customers want fruit.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, and you know, rightfully so, you know. I think it helps sour beer as a category, right, because a lot of the fruits can... aligned to hop profiles. Now we talk about guava, right? Like mm-hmm. Citra.
Yeah.
And that can open the category in a more broad sense, which I think can do us all good. And it's another lever to play with, right? All of your tools are levers that you can use. And in sour beer, with the boysenberry one, and we haven't really talked about it, but like the pectin body that comes from the fruit gives it, even though it's got like zero gravity left, it gives it some body. Even though it's dry, right?
Yeah.
It gives it some body to sort of support the flavor profile as a whole. And I think that's why fruit and sour beer works together so well. Because it gives the pectin, gives it nice body to balance it.
I recommend the mango for that, for sure.
Yeah. Yum.
Because the public loves fruit and fruited sours, have you ever thought about saying something is fruited when it isn't? Like it's like so pineapple-y, and you're just like, hey, pineapple sour on tap number two.
So I was down in Orange County in the last few days and hanging out with some old friends, and I used to live there and brew beer at the brewery, and I was talking with our friend Jeremy from Brewery Chiru. He and I were discussing that, you know, they're about to be 12 or 13 years old now, which is absolutely insane. But we started not me at all, but the brewery started a 12 Days of Christmas beer series for their winter seasonal over time. And I asked him, hey, are we going to redo Partridge in a Pear Tree, which is obviously the first in that series? And I reminisce that beer was brewed before my time, but... it was like a Belgian quad. That was like a 10% beer. And people would constantly comment that, I love the pear character in this beer. This is like absolutely no pear. It's just called Partridge in a Pear Tree. But
power of suggestion.
Yeah. And so that just reminded me of that, is that we didn't have to say that, but it was in the name. So people infer. They see what they want to see.
Yeah, they taste what they think they taste. Yeah. Yeah, makes sense to me.
Unless you add Oregon fruit, because then it's just a great expression of the raw fruit.
No,
easy to use.
No additives. Yeah.
Love working with brewers to help us innovate.
Love you, Jim.
Check them out for brewing.com. They bring food to life.
From the heart.
No text message.
That was. No reading.
I still want
anything.
That text. But by the way, we haven't done Matt's text again.
Yeah, let's tease it, because we got one more beer and one more segment and a question.
Well, can you give me your phone?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'll pull that up.
So my kids always ask for our phones. They always want to play on our phones.
That would be the most, like, you know, cop-out parenting tactic ever.
And I use it
here, kid. Just play on the thing.
How many kids do you have, Scott?
They're
zero.
All sitting out there playing on their phones. You don't see them?
Zero, yeah. Give them a few years.
I got friends with kids, man. I see what they do.
Screw this guy.
Just play on
I'm
your phone.
I'm thinking something short and like this.
I'm going to drink a beer.
This question and all questions brought to you by Dr. Lambic of sourbeerblog.com. Check out Sour Beer Blog for in-depth articles on brewing and blending sour beer. And now you can criticize parenting techniques just like Scott and taste Dr. Lambic's beers in person by visiting Melomink Brewing in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. Melomink Brewing, melomink.com.
I'm only judging a little.
To be fair, they're just using the calculator.
Either just text to you. Never mind. I'm staying.
You really jumped to, jumped to Netflix. You jumped to
Bevo says,
YouTube.
Never mind. I'm staying.
Oh, good.
We can do more information.
It's like, remember you used to use the calculator to write the word boobless?
That's where I was going, but you know what?
I knew where you were going,
fine,
brother.
Fine.
Yeah. Okay, let's do this one from Brian Farrell. We'll tease it. Yeah, yes, we are. This is a question about horse blanket character, and what happened to Brian's horse blanket character? He doesn't know.
What happened to it?
Where did it go?
All right, we'll be right back to answer that question and more on the Sour Hour. You're listening to the Sour Hour on BrewingNetwork.com.
.com?
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. This is Jamel Zainashev, and I want to tell you about Heretic Evil Twin. You might be familiar with my homebrew recipe, which uses massive late hopping to create a balance between the malty sweet and the hoppy bitter, along with an outrageous malt and hop character. I wanted a beer with the same bold hop and malt character, so we played around with the homebrew recipe until we were able to make a great commercial version, too. We've created a beer rich in malt character, full of caramel, toast, biscuit, and an ever-so-subtle roast note. On top of that, we piled in an insane amount of Citra and Columbus hops at the end of the boil, as well as in dry hopping. This damn-the-cost approach to hopping gives Heretic's Evil Twin a great blast of citrus and tropical fruit that can't be matched by any other hop. The result is a bold, malty, hoppy, but easy-drinking beer. This is our top seller, our flagship beer, and I couldn't be prouder of it. Cheers.
To find Heretic beers near you, click on Find Some at hereticbrewing.com.
Street Brewery, you're listening to the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
You're seeing what tomorrow or on Friday?
On Friday, we're going to go to see
Party Wave Day.
Collab with Party Wave Day?
Yeah. Only Party Wave. We're back. Final segment. Episode 101. A lot of beers today.
Party Wave Day!
Back with Rubens Brews and Oregon Fruit. We have the beer that's on tap now. What is this?
Finally.
What's in our glass?
Tart Cherry Vice. This is kind of a start of a kind of building out of a series for us of kind of like core kettle sour beers that we have on throughout the year. So Goza's now kind of fit into one section of that, and then we have Tart Cherry Vice, we have Razzmatazz, and what's the last one?
Holiday Goza.
Holiday Goza, there you go. So, and Tart Cherry Vice, as you can imagine, is primarily tart cherries. And so we use a Berliner Weiss base and then do basically a box of fruit puree per barrel, which is like 42 pounds per barrel for that, which is quite a bit. And often we've recently discovered that we need to keep that into account when we do yields and not overflow our tanks when we need to actually add it in.
Fruit is good.
It's a lot of volume. So definitely keep that in mind. But yeah, so, definitely something that we're kind of just getting into right now of getting these into cans and getting these into our market out there. I guess I'll let Adam kind of jump into the specifics of the beer.
Yeah. So it's the same lactose strain that came from my house all those years ago.
Carboy strain.
Yeah, carboy strain.
We just call it Adam. That's it.
And then talk crap about it. very clean Berliner using our kettle sour process. We put this in cans. One of our major sort of annual can lines is a sour series. So we used to have that as Goza all year round. And then in the tap room with our 24 different beers on tap, we would like be playing with different things. So Holiday Goza was one idea, a cranberry orange version. So we reduced the coriander down, put some sweet orange in and coriander again from Oregon Fruit products. I can't remember the rest of the spiel, sorry. I know about put it in your mouth.
Easy to use, convenient to store.
That was your outside voice.
Yeah, so that was like one that we did as we got a limoncello is another one. Yeah, which is like a imperial goza with lemon that is a nice beer. And we just, the idea of our of our tap rooms is to try lots of different things and, you know, experiment, try different things, and then see if people like that, right? And so Tart Cherry Vice was one that Thor and I did years and years ago, right?
It's been quite a while, yeah.
Yeah, and we did just, like, individual keg versions mm-hmm. of this. And yeah. people really, really liked it. So then we scaled it to 10 barrels, scaled it to 30 barrels. Mm-hmm. And was that a 90 we did last time, or a 60? We did more than what we had, because literally the yield was like 92%, which is kind of crazy.
No, it was 100%+.
Oh.
Which is pretty good. I mean, you got to give us credit. No, yeah, that was a 60-barrel the last time we did it.
Chris credit for that. So,
yeah, yes, absolutely, yes. Turns out fruit volume, real volume.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last round was the 60 at the new brewery. So, yeah, that, it was a big step for us, for sure. Yeah,
so we actually got more beer out than cooled in wort. Oh, yeah. The beer gods love that.
Yeah. Excellent. And how you guys have done now so many beers. What have been just overall some of the big parts of your process that you've improved upon over time that you think have been like just made the biggest difference in improvements in your beer quality?
You know, I guess in terms of this beer specifically, we've been looking at ways to make sure that we can really incorporate that fruit as easily and I guess as effectively as possible, and a lot of that has been like pump rousing as we add it. So we add, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pounds of fruit through the dry hop port, which, you know, hopefully is at least 5 to 6 inches on our tanks, but sometimes it's 3 or even smaller depending on some, and we have 1.5 inch on some, and so it can be a challenge, and getting all of that in is step one, and then we'll essentially close everything up and then just, you know, use the sanitized pump rig and just go from the bottom and recycle back through the racking arm and basically just make sure everything gets really incorporated. And we do that. We've been kind of experimenting with doing that over multiple days or doing that over kind of one charge. And for a beer like this, we're doing that kind of at the high krausen stage because we want to get, you know, fermentation complete. We don't want this to be something where it's, you know, going late fermentation and then it's having, you know, say diacetyl or VDK issues later on. So that's been kind of a big kind of production thing that we've been looking at is how do we get the most fruit flavor as effectively as possible. So that's been, like, lately that's been the biggest thing.
How do you get so much clarity out of this beer? It's just stunningly clear. It's gorgeous.
I think for lately it's at time. I mean, we biofine, but that's, you know, we don't filter for this beer. We have filtered for some of our fruit beers, but, you know, sometimes the pectin can kind of definitely gum that up, you know, literally. But for this, yeah, just biofine in time and just making sure we feel good about that at packaging time.
Stunning.
And one thing we've learned over time, I have to give a big shout out to James because he joined us two years ago. And
drinking at the time, yeah.
I thought you were going to say up. The exact amount of days.
Just a little under 2 years, yeah. Almost, yeah. 1 month away.
And yeast health, that's all I have to say, is so many off flavors in any beer, commercial or otherwise, is around yeast health. And he's really brought to us a big focus on quality of ferment. And it's, you know, pitch rates when we harvest. And it's been really, really focused on that. And that, to me, in the, you know, six and a half years old that we are, I think that's what's really changed now. And to the point where you can almost tell the generation of a yeast. And I really appreciate him for doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty good. I think it's on the record.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
When the review comes around.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I mean, I think a big thing is, you know, knowing your fermentations in terms of, you know, when you're getting to that tail end, that yeast, if it can come out, it wants to come out. And no yeast wants to hang out in a CO2 environment with no sugar. And I think that's really key for brewing on any level, whether that's production brewing, sour brewing, it's not doing you any favors to keep that yeast in for a lot of beer styles. And just keeping that in mind and knowing that if you want to kind of keep things healthy going forward, it's hard to pull out from kind of a spiral downhill. And you'll see that generation after generation. So, you know, that's definitely a big thing is if you can get yeast out, get it out. And use it as early as you can if it is down there. Because it's not, you know, on a professional level, if it's in the cone, it's not doing anything other than dying. So, you know, something to keep in mind.
Did we tease out a question before the break and never pay it off? Sounds like me.
It does sound like you, and we definitely did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's do that.
now.
Yes, well, let's do it. Yes, we did Brian Farrell's question, kinda. It was about his horse blanket and where it went. Yeah. I'm a big fan of horse blanket and barnyard aromas and sour beer, but I'm just not getting any in my long-aged sour goldens. I've got a good pipeline of about a dozen one-gallon jugs at various ages, all golden ales. He says, see the rare barrel's golden recipe. So I think he's using your old ? Recipe?
No.
Same one?
Correct.
Or Saison-type malt bills. They are tasting really good. All have Brett as well as Lacto and Pedio pitched into secondary, and I've mostly been using Brett blends from TYB, Amalgamation and Beersel.
East Bay.
East Bay, yep. As well as White Labs, Brux, and Lambicus. All of my beers are primary with sack only, usually a Belgian strain like 550. So after primary, there are lots of spicy phenolics, which I was hoping would be converted into the barnyard aromas by the Brett. Most of these beers are starting primary around 13.5 and finishing at 2.5. In parentheses, he has the OG conversions. So he's for you pros in here. He knows his audience. I do get some very slight funk when I am tasting these beers, but it is more musty than anything else. And no barnyard or horse blanket. Interestingly, I did get some fantastic horse blanket aromas from a two-week-old Brett starter culture that went into about a 10:30 starter wort. Should I be doing something different? Will I need to wait for those farmyard Brett aromatics to kick in during bottle conditioning without doing anything else? Should I try co-pitching the Brett in primary with a sack strain or maybe make a Brett Saison? He doesn't know what he should do, basically.
It's one of the best emails that's ever been written, I think, right there.
Why is that?
Well, just because he gave so much detail, he or she, who was it?
His name is Brian.
Brian,
yeah.
I guess he. So much detail to where as you were doing... You went on with the email, and...
there's more. You know, well, I stopped.
It was just like, well, that was my first suggestion. That was my second.
For me to stop.
No, third. Yeah. No. It was just like he had been working on this along the way. Yeah, the barnyard, that is, I would think, different Brett strains, lots of hops, also more phenolic primary fermentation yeast. It sounds like you went through all that, and... It's funny that you say that the one thing that you did get it in was the two-week-old starter. And I don't try to drive barnyard aromatics in the beer. I think Brett aromatics, that's an umbrella term, but I kind of like more of the fruity, intriguing aromatics. We had the Pillars of Gold earlier. That was a good example of that. Not barnyardy, but very Brett-forward. I don't know if people consider Orval to be barnyard. To me, that's like classic Brettanomyces.
Yeah.
Or clean
Brett.
So what I would do is bottle condition with Brett, because you had that fleeting Brett aromatic young at 2 weeks. You want to capture that, take that strain and do like a Belgian pale ale, bottle condition with Brett, and see if you can capture it in the bottle, because it might just be blowing off at a younger age.
Yeah. That's a great point. Did he say that he was using many hops? I didn't.
He doesn't mention hops anywhere in the season.
Really? Oh, I thought he did.
Did he? Did I miss it?
So maybe dry hopping a little bit.
If he didn't mention before that, then yes.
He didn't. The only thing he says is that he's using your golden base recipe, which...
More hops. More hops.
Bravo.
This is something I never thought I'd heard you say. That was never advice you would have given on episode number two.
Well, you know, we're both a lot better.
We've evolved.
Now,
yeah,
welcome
that's so
to
true.
101.
We made it.
Oh, yeah.
It's 101,
this is,
right?
This is Sour Beer 101. So,
episode of.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Brian. That's more hops. I'm sorry. Maybe I just inferred that, but more hops, and then bottle condition with Brett. So do that later. Earlier. Trap it.
Thank you for the Brian's out there in Frisco, Texas. He had just visited.
Not California.
He was.
Don't call it Frisco.
He was. I don't know if he was writing us like on the way to or from Jester King. He was like, "Oh, I'm visiting Jester King." So thank you for shooting us the email, Brian. We appreciate it a lot. Good luck with your beer. And I think we have. You want to end on your final question?
Yes, I do. I'd like to ask everyone in the room, starting with Chris, what's the biggest mistake in sour beer making? Not ordering Oregon fruit.
I just say put it in your mouth.
Is that the mistake?
Not in my book.
That's funny.
Is that a real question?
That's the question.
Well, as far as I can tell, there are no wrong things to do in sour beer making, as long as you make one that is palatable and that has the desired outcome of the brewer who wrote the recipe. And if it has fruit, great. If it doesn't have fruit, fantastic. But I think that the sour beer category, in my mind, is one of the up-and-coming categories that can turn a ton of people on to beer in general. So make more of it, please.
Make more good versions of
yes,
it.
Yes,
please.
Thank you.
Yes.
I think to that point, similarly.
Scott, will you move the mic a little closer?
Just for God,
no, I think it's plenty close.
I'm going to kiss it.
I just wanted it one
Scott's
more time.
Scott's head just exploded.
I just wanted you to
get your beard in the mic. Get your beard in the mic. That's it. Rub it.
I think knowing your beer and knowing when your beer has gone too sour, I think is kind of like a big mistake.
You're tasting things that are just too acidic?
Too very, very acidic. Almost.
What do you do
just
then?
Vinegar. I probably would just want to serve it.
Then what do you do with it?
I just say put it in your mouth.
Even if it's too acidic? Come on, Chris. It just seems like at a certain point...
Okay, this is a really weird segue, but I want to tell you this. If you read Michael Jackson's book, not that Michael Jackson, he said that the most refreshing beer in the world is Rodenbach, which is a sour beer.
He likes the Grand Cru. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's also pretty sour.
Yeah. James? What else? Biggest mistake?
So I guess going on along the same lines as Thor is kind of like, I think being willing to say no to a barrel, being willing to say no to something you've been sitting on and working on and slaving over and put so much work into, and realizing you can't blend it out, you can't feel good about having it go out there. I think that's super important for the health of the industry in general, for the health of sour beer in general, is to not burn anyone. You know, putting down hard-earned money on awesome, awesome beer and to get something that isn't great. And it behooves all of us to just be honest with ourselves and feel like we've done the best we can, and when we haven't, try it again and go to the next barrel and feel willing to just dump things when we need to and not just put it in our mouths. I think it's really... I think that's my thesis here, and I guess you could say...
Touché.
You know.
I think you just said it way better than I thought.
It's just... Clearly, it's just antithetical to put it in your mouth.
Yeah, it's the opposite.
Adam? Can't top that.
No, I can't top that. So...
Ghost Burst.
Put it in your mouth.
Damn it.
So, I've listened to many of this podcast, and I've thought about this question for a lot. In my mind, let's go back to when I first moved to this country in 2004. IPAs was kind of starting. It was like an IBU arms race, right? We were trying to make IPAs as bitter as we could because that was what we thought was a defining character that what IPA should be. I think we're getting over the crest of this now, but like suddenly I think in terms of mouth puckering sourness, that's not what sour beer is. There's balance, should be balance in every beer and balance in an IPA. I think we're seeing now IPAs softening that bitterness, right? And we're talking about like fruit forward characters in IPAs. And we don't have to be enamel stripping in a sour beer. And we're trying to, we're coming back into that. We've still got to get a lot further back, a lot further to the balanced side. You know, sounds a bit like Star Wars, but I think that's the issue. We shouldn't pull too hard in puckering sourness.
Agreed. That you stick your hand out and then the lightsaber just comes toward you. Yeah. No pull.
The glass.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's a different version of, you know, be able to be honest with yourself with when your beer is too acidic. And also, don't attempt to make your beer too acidic. It's like not too acidic, either purposeful or not.
Compare it to a poker strategy.
You just don't want to be overly aggressive. I mean, if you're just in there raising and going all in all the time, I mean, it seems good because, like, aggression wins, but you're going to get burned if you don't choose your spots carefully.
Sunk odds and being pot committed.
Yeah, I see that. You do see that a lot, though. You really do. Like, oh, well,
time our chips.
I've already got 3/4 of my stack in. I guess I just have to now call off the rest of it, except for you have to stay alive. You know you're not good.
I'm too sour here, but I've... spent all this
but
time.
I spent it all. But you
chips.
Know you're not good. So now you're going to burn the last 20% even though you know you're
torching.
You're torching.
Toss it.
Stop torching.
Live to fight another day.
I fold.
Fold. Yeah. Just fold. It feels bad, man, but you can just fold.
Good enough to call, good enough to raise. All
indeed.
Right. Check, check, check.
All night, he check. He trapped me.
All right. Thanks for our guest. Got to get out of here with a rounder's ref. Thank you so much to Ruben's Brews in the house.
Thanks,
and for coming
down.
Nice
thanks for having us.
Cheers. Love the beers.
Thanks so much to Chris.
Thanks, Jace. Thanks
for the best sound drop we've ever had.
So far.
Thanks to Vivo.
I just say put it in your mouth.
Love Vivo. Wow, that's inappropriate. Thanks to Scott. Thanks to the listeners. Until next time, stay sour.
I just say put it in your mouth.